fifth morning, sir, what is your name?
My name is Aaron Holliday.
Okay, hello, Mr. Holliday. I believe that the Honorable Ms. Windhouse is prepared, to conduct your hearing, so please, that's all on, sir.
Yes, and I believe we have phone calls.
Yeah, we have three phone calls.
Three phone calls.
One is you are available.
Yes, I will certainly assist.
So we're going to try to reach, keep on the phone and...
Okay.
Hello?
Yes, is this Ms. Holliday?
Who?
Ms. Holliday?
Yes.
Ma'am, this is Louis Quinones. I'm with the Arizona Board of Executive Clemency, and we're about to have a parole hearing for Mr.
Yes,
Holliday.
Yes, I'm aware of that. Yes, I've been waiting for your call this morning.
Thank you very much. Now, we have to patch in some other phone calls for this hearing, so we just ask that you be patient.
Yes.
It's a little... We're sensitive here, patching these phone calls together. So if you just hang on, but please don't hang up because I'm going to try to patch in two more calls. Okay, ma'am?
Okay, thank you so much.
Thank you. Executive Clemency. I'm trying to get a hold of Ms. Michelle Lee.
Yes, that's me. Hi.
Yes, I'm trying to patch in some phone calls right now for a parole hearing. Will you be participating?
Yes.
If you'll just be patient, I am trying to patch in some calls right now, and it's a little sensitive with the technology, but if you'll just remain patient, I'm going to try to have another phone call.
Okay, thank you.
I'm trying to get a hold of Angel Edmonds.
Yes, that's me.
Okay, I'm trying to patch in some phone calls right now for a parole hearing, so if you'll just be patient, we'll try to get you all on the same call. Thank you.
Okay.
Okay, at this point, who do I have online? I have
Michelle Lee.
And Angel Edmonds?
Uh-huh.
Is Nina Holliday still on the line? She's not. I'm going to have to try again. Sorry. This is a little sensitive. Thank you.
Thank you.
Patching the calls at the same time. So let me see if I can get it this time. So just stand by, ma'am, okay?
Thank you. Is it okay if I have my son get on the other extension?
That's no problem. Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, do I have Ms. Nina Holliday still on the phone?
Yes, I'm here.
Michelle Lee?
Yes.
And Angel Edmonds?
Yes, hi.
Okay, and I think Ms. Nina Holliday stated someone else was going to be on the line too. Who would that be?
I would be Archie Holiday. He hasn't gotten on the line yet. I don't know if he will or not.
Okay, that's fine. Just let us know if Mr. Archie Holiday is going to speak on behalf of the inmate, and we'll let you know when it is time at that portion of the hearing. Okay, ma'am?
Okay.
Okay, I'm going to go ahead and turn over the hearing now to our panel lead. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, good morning. Mr. Holiday?
Yes.
Hello?
Mr. Holiday, could you please state your full name and your ADC number for the record?
My name is Aaron G. Holiday. DOC number was 67113.
Okay, thank you, sir. You're appearing before the Arizona Board of Executive Clemency for a 412B hearing, which is a parole to a consecutive sentence or absolute discharge this morning. You became eligible for this on September 16th of 2016. I'd like to introduce you to the board members conducting the hearing. If you look on the video screen to your right, so my left, the other end of the bench for me, is on the very end is the Honorable Louis Quinones. Right next to him, the Honorable David Neal. Right next to me here in the middle of the bench is our board chairman, the Honorable Dr. C.T. White. And my name's Gail Rittenhouse. I'll be the panel lead today. And you also heard that we have three people on the phone, Michelle Lee, Vina Holiday, and Angel Evans, that are participating in this hearing. So I'll start with a brief summary of your case. It appears that you had served a five-year aggravated assault and a one-and-a-half-year endangerment sentence, but those have expired. Those are older sentences. And at this present time, you're serving 25 years to life for the crime of murder in the first degree. And you have a consecutive 18-year sentence for conspiracy to commit burglary in the first degree. And then to that, you have a consecutive, and these two are running concurrent, if I figured this out correctly, you have an aggravated assault 12 years and kidnapping 15 years. So those two are running together. Is that correct as you understand it?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, good. I figured it out right. It was a little complicated. It looks like at the present time you're 55 years old, sir. Is that correct?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, thank you. The crime occurred, the murder and these other, I believe, occurred all at the same time on September 12, 1991. And you were about 22 at the time that that happened?
I believe I was 28.
28. Okay, well, my math was not so good there. Okay. And you were convicted by a jury trial on July 23, 1993. And sentenced on August 23rd, 1993. It looks like you appealed your conviction, but it was affirmed on July 25th, 1996. It looks like, just reviewing your criminal history, it looks like in 1984 there was an aggravated assault in Florida, and then Arizona there was criminal damage and an aggravated assault, disorderly conduct, another aggravated assault in Minnesota, aiding and abetting, a flight and escape, disorderly conduct, failure to appear, endangerment, aggravated assault, a burglary, a probation revocation, and then Tennessee and escape. In prison, your discipline history, you've had seven major violations here in this system, and the last discipline was March 5th of 2015, and that was a major. Do you remember that it's possession and manufacturing? We get a little abbreviation of what the violation was. Do you remember what that was about, sir?
Yes, ma'am. It was a bottle of homemade alcohol hooch
okay.
that they found inside of my ice chest, inside of my living area.
Okay. And was it yours?
It was. I told my attorney to put it there, so yeah, I have to claim responsibility for it.
Okay, sir. It looks like you have done some programming while you're in prison. You have some substance abuse education. smart recovery, cultural diversity, thinking for a change. Can you think of anything else that you've taken?
Yeah, I believe I turned in a tour packet to the town.
Yes, you did. We have it right here.
I believe there's 16 certificates there that are, if I counted right, I'm not sure that I remember all of them, but some of them are more current than others.
Okay.
I taught some of the classes. I was instructor for some of the classes for years, and I took as many programs as they offer here.
Okay. What class did you teach, sir?
I taught, I think the certificate will say instructor on it. It says the certificates they give you are just for participants.
Is it the wellness?
Yes.
Wellness and
yes.
Awareness? Okay, I see that one right here.
Right, I was a yoga instructor for years.
Okay.
I taught a boot camp training class for new arrival inmates. And I just participated as best I could. And,
okay.
And the things that were available to me. And here they have in-house self-study stuff.
Right.
So I took all of the programs that they offer here as well.
Okay. And have you been on an ongoing basis participating in AA or an NA or something like that?
I have not at this moment.
Okay, because there's a mention, I see a certificate in here for that. I just didn't know if you were, if that was a one-time thing or...
I was just basically trying to review the information that I got from that course.
Okay.
I just wanted to review it again, so I got the packet and took the little stuff in-house study that they offered here.
Okay. All right. It looks like you... this is about the third time you've been before this board, give or take. It's on this sentence. I guess you were granted... parole on a previous sentence. Those expired sentences that I mentioned.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay.
It was aggravated assault, I think, and endangerment.
Yes, those
and
are.
And served 6.5 years and was released from prison, I think, in 1989 or 1990.
And how did you do on parole when you were granted parole?
I just did great. I was until I committed those other crimes.
Okay, and were you on parole at the time of the other crimes?
No, ma'am. You had the parole had already expired.
You had finished parole. Okay, so you weren't on any kind of probation or parole when the murder occurred.
No, ma'am. I was not.
Okay, good. All right. Well, now that we've come to that subject, we have a written summary of the offense, but it is a little difficult to follow because it's kind of complicated, and whoever wrote this report felt they had to put every detail in here. So in general, I can see that it was about, there was a shooting, and the man was found in a garage, I guess. And there were a number of you, or a group of you, I guess, that were involved in this. So there was a lot of different, there were interviews with different people, and everybody seems to have kind of the same story. But if we could have you explain what happened that day, that'd be great. So can you tell us what happened?
Yes, ma'am. I try to do the Reader's Digest version and make it a, that's what you want.
That would help it out.
Me and three other friends, Al Henry, Tom Allen, and Kim Edmonds, we drove to Chino Valley from Kingman, Arizona, and we were going to trade a weapon of a 243 Winchester rifle, hunting rifle, for methamphetamine. When we reached the house, Tara went into the garage with me, and Al Henry and Kim Edmonds stayed at the next door neighbor's house, who was a friend of Al Henry's, by the name of Donald Rush. When upon entry of the garage, The father was there visiting from California, and he apparently believed that I was going to rob them or to do, just, I don't know what he thought really, just assuming. And he attempted to take the weapon away from me. He yanked on the barrel of the gun about 3 times, took me across the garage floor, and actually pulled the rifle out of my hand. And on its way through my fingers, I apparently hit the trigger of the rifle, and it shot him right through the heart and through his spine and one of his lungs and killed him instantly. And I dropped the rifle on the floor, and for a second I thought somebody else shot him. There was a huge boom in the garage, it was like an explosion, and there's a backlash of this man's from the gunshot over my face. I couldn't see. I picked up the gun and pulled the bullet back on just to couldn't believe it. I shot him. And a shell flew out with smoke, and I realized I had shot this person. At that point, I just wanted to, flee. I wanted to leave. I could see clearly that this man was deceased. His eyes were wide open, non-blinking. He was not breathing. He had a huge hole in his chest from the explosion. He was gunned. And I was just terrified, petrified, just didn't know what to do. I knew that one of the other people were there, and I didn't want them to call the police or have me arrested. And so I went inside the house, and his son was indeed there, Jimmy Briggs, and he was playing the drums in the back room and hadn't heard anything that happened. And I tied him up with a cord off of a fan, not really help, just wrapped it around his wrists and put him in the back room until I could make it to the car next door and leave without him seeing the car that I was in. And I was arrested several days later. I told Al Henry and Kim Edmonds and Ty Allen to go back to their mom's house and tell their mom what happened. And I had them drop me off in the Kaibab National Forest. And Ty didn't want me to go alone, so she went with me. Kim Edmonds and Al Henry went back to Ty's mother and told her what had happened. She immediately called the police, of course. And I wandered through the desert for about a day and a half with Tara until she decided she had enough and wanted to turn herself in. So I brought her to a place home where she could call her mother, and the police took a picture of her there. I ran into the woods again, several days later, the search team pinned me down with dogs and helicopter, and they got me jailed and charged me with felony murder for causing this man's death in the course of a burglary. They charged me with burglary in the first degree, conspiracy to commit burglary, aggravated assault, and kidnapping. At trial, I was acquitted of premeditation. I was acquitted of burglary in the first degree. I was found guilty of felony murder, which is the equivalent of first degree murder without premeditation. I lay around. And the kidnapping and aggravated assault, they gave me 25 life for felony murder. They gave me 18 years for conspiracy to commit the burglary, even though they acquitted me of the burglary. But they gave me 15 years for kidnapping and 12 years for aggravated assault. And they ran all of those sentences consecutively with each other, except for the kidnapping and aggravated assault.
Okay. All right, sir. Thank you. Well, that certainly helps me to understand what happened that day. Now, whose gun was it? Was it your gun, or were you buying the gun?
The gun belonged to Tara's sister, Michelle.
Okay, so the four of you brought that gun there, then?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. Okay, so the victim, then, is the person who had the meth that you were trading it for?
Actually, the victim was completely innocent. He was the father of the guy that had the meth. He was visiting from California, from what I understand. Even though he owned the house, he resided in California.
Oh, I see. Okay. Were you involved in drug use at that time of your life?
What?
Were you involved in drug use?
Yes, ma'am. I certainly was.
Okay.
I've seen a lot of people here who, since I've been in prison, they have like some kind of constant use. I held a job, I went to work every day, I had a house, I had a car, I had, you know, that kind of basically functioning, not just but I was absolutely using drugs on the weekends or I don't know, whenever I could, really.
Okay. What drugs were you using, sir?
Methamphetamine and drinking alcohol.
Okay. And what, how long would you say, when did you start using those? How old were you?
I had a very good, I mean, my mother is very protective, very religious, and she protected or shielded us from most of us until our late age. And so I don't think I really started using, I mean, I tried smoking marijuana, I guess, a couple of times when I was underage. But I started around 17, 18 to drink beer and try to drugs at the kids that I was hanging out with, just trying. I never really was as a full-grown addict, I don't think. I just kind of dabbled in it off and on for years until I began to get in trouble with my poor decisions.
Okay, so at this point, so you say you started sampling or trying alcohol and meth around 17 or 18 years old, and then this crime occurred when you said you were 28?
Yes, ma'am.
So for about 10 years, you had been kind of using meth on the weekends.
Well, I was in prison for a part of that time.
Oh, exactly. I forgot.
And county jails in Florida. He listed a lot of aggravated assaults and things that I was in jail for, aiding and abetting and things like that. These are the crimes that I was charged with but never convicted of.
Okay.
I'm not denying my responsibility for any of that.
Okay.
What I'm saying now. I'm just saying that I was not convicted of those charges. So I spent years in jail, and then I spent those years in prison. And then I spent a year on parole as well.
Right.
This time I did no drugs and
okay.
No alcohol and tried to straighten myself out some. So
okay.
It wasn't a constant thing from the time I was 17, but it was definitely use and it was definitely wrong.
Okay. And were the other people with you that day, were they also involved in drugs?
Yes.
Okay. So you all were.
Yes, ma'am.
Were you high at the time of the crime?
No, ma'am. I drank some beers that morning.
Okay.
But that was all.
Okay. Well, you drove down, right? You drove from Kingman down there?
Yes, ma'am. Tara Allen drove
okay.
In her mother's car. It was a Chrysler New Yorker, I think it's 1990 Chrysler New Yorker.
Okay. All right, so before I ask any more questions, I'm going to see if my fellow board members have any questions. Mr. Quinones has a question for you.
Thank you, Ms. Rittenhouse. Mr. Holliday?
Yes, sir.
I just have one question here. I got to tell you, I find that you account very well for the crimes that you were involved in. And I paid close attention to your behavior inside the prison system. You talked about actually instructing or teaching, which is very positive. I guess the curiosity I have is for someone who seems to have been productive inside the Department of Corrections, you had this major for possession or manufacturing of, we'll just say prison hooch, in 2015. It was so close to your first eligibility for parole, and I was trying to figure out why you would risk that at that stage of your prison odyssey.
I don't want to gain my responsibility for it, but I'll tell you exactly what happened if you want to hear that.
Well, we don't have to get, like, real deep in the details. I was just wondering why you would take that risk so close to the possibility of a parole hearing.
Right. I actually would not have. But I was outside working out on the field, and my friend, a very good friend of mine, in here, someone gave him a bottle of homemade alcohol, and I had an ice chest in my house that I allowed all the other inmates to use as a communal ice chest, and the dude put their sodas in it, and I'd buy a batch of ice every night with an ice ticket, and they threw all the sodas in my ice. This person who gave Bob his bottle of alcohol came out to the red field and told Bob that he was giving him this bottle of alcohol. And Bob said he wanted to put it in the ice chest so it'd be cold after we finished our workout. And I told him that that would be fine. And he put it in my ice chest. And about one set from my workout later, we thought that whole situation, and I thought, I don't want that in there, and I'm going to go work out, and I immediately left the rec field and my workout to go remove this thing from my ice chest. I ran into the house, they were doing a box check, what they call it. There was kind of a pandemic of pooch making going on at this unit, and they were constantly doing box checks to make sure that no one had any boxes that they were making pooch in. We were in the process of conducting one of those checks when I entered the house, and there was nothing I could do except stand at my house and hope that they didn't find this bottle of fruits mixed in with all of the other bottles of Kool-Aid and sodas that were in that ice chest. But of course, they did find it, and they charged me with it.
Okay, sir. I will say we have to make some tough decisions on behalf of the people of Arizona, but I do commend you for working hard on your rehabilitation. Thank you, Mr. Holliday. Thank you, Mr.
Any other questions from board members? Dr. White has a question.
I have a question. Just want to make a comment. Just want to make sure I understand. You already explained it, Mr. Rittenhouse, but if just we saw fit to run him to his next consecutive sentence, that would be for, just want to make sure I understood that, that would be for burglary in the first degree, which would be 18 years.
Right.
Then after he would complete that, then he would still have consecutive sentences, both of them would be together for aggravated assault and kidnapping. Was that?
That's correct.
That is correct.
That's
so
correct.
He's not at the gate yet. He's no. Away from the gate. I just wanted to make sure I understood that.
Exactly.
Thank you so very much, ma'am.
Thank you, Dr. Wright. I know that was a little confusing, but Mr. Holliday himself explained it better than I did.
We
both figured it out. Okay, so Mr. Holliday, what if the tables were turned and we were talking to you about what's changed in you? Why should this board grant you parole?
Well, I think the biggest thing that's changed about me is I was young and I didn't really take responsibility for anything. I didn't really understand how the world actually works. I was super selfish. I wanted instant gratification from everything around me, and I really didn't care about much about what anybody else had going on. All of that is different now. I've learned some kind of social responsibility, or I see it at least, and I understand the importance of it. I see people's mistakes and what it does to their not only their lives, but the lives of their families and the people around them and their communities. And I've just watched it as a train of behavior and consequence for the last 27 years. And for a long time now, I've seen that people have to control their behavior, people have to control their emotions, people have to do the right thing, or else nothing works. If we can't do that, it all falls apart. And if it all falls apart, then we have what? Some sort of chaos. But mainly, what I've learned over this time is that family is very important. Community is very important. Things like law enforcement and penal systems, all of these things are very, very important. And education is something I think is, education and knowledge is more important than maybe all of it. So my entire view of life, I think, has changed since I've been here. I don't think it has. I'm absolutely certain that it has. And being 55 years old now, I feel like, I don't want to go out and have fun. I don't want to go out and have a blast. I don't think the world owes me anything anymore. I feel like we all owe something to the people around us. And I would rather get out of here and have the opportunity to make amends in any way that I can. First to my family, who love me desperately, who didn't see this coming, who didn't deserve this in any way. I have a daughter that you have on the phone right now who was born after I came to prison. Her mother was my co-defendant, Kim Edmonds, and she was pregnant at the time that I was arrested. So I've never been a part of her life. Only what I can do here in this system. And I believe that it's just tragic all the way around. You know, I made huge mistakes. I hurt everybody involved, not just myself or the victim or the victim's family, but certainly my family. And now I understand the community as well. And it's just something that I want to change. I know that it's the right thing to do now, and I believe it wholeheartedly. And then also, I studied my faith, you know. I was raised by my mother with a very strong faith, and I turned away from that and turned my back on it for a long time, and I still have my moments. But I think overall, I believe that there's something more than this, and I believe that there's a right and a wrong, and I would like to have the opportunity to make some moves up to my family, to make some moves up to do something good with my life instead of just dying in a place like this.
Okay, sir. Thank you very much for that statement. I think you've displayed a lot of insight about yourself and, you know, what you thought for the past 27 years. So at this time, I think I'm going to ask ask your supporters if they would like to speak. I don't know who wants to go first. We have three people on the phone. Shall I just pick somebody? Is that okay with everybody? Maybe Ms. Lee.
Yes.
Ms. Lee, would you like to go first?
Ms. Lee?
Yes.
That's Michelle. I'm Michelle Lee, and I'm Aaron's younger sister.
Okay.
She's 5 years older than me. We have three other siblings as well. There's five of us all together, and we have four brothers, one and a girl, so, I have seen a huge change in my brother. You know, there's been quite a bit of a stretch where, you know, I was busy with, you know, my own family, raising my own children, living out of state, and I didn't have a lot of contact with my brother, which I really regret, because in the last few years we really made an effort to get to know each other again, and spend time and visits and doing food visits and, you know, my mother and I, especially my mother and I, travel up there as often as we can. We try to come every 6 months at least for a food visit. And, you know, the change, I mean, just looking at my brother, the look on his face, the expression on his face, the look in his eyes is just very different. He's a different person. He's calm. He's caring. He's very, very intelligent. He has so many talents that, you know, all this time, I mean, not that our relationship wasn't a good relationship before this happened. It was just he was 5 years older than me, and our lives were in different places and stuff, but my brother has always been a very smart man, very talented man. You know, I know when he was younger, he was in, like, mentally gifted classes for children. I know he also had, you know, some problems with attention deficit disorder, and, you know, so, but he's always been so creative and so intelligent, and I, you know, just thought that there was so much of his life that was just wasted because of the bad choices that he made, you know, but that, you know, not on the past, but for, like, now, in the present, I've seen remorse in him, you know, and even he knows that there's nothing he can do to make it up or to change anything or to fix anything, but he's expressed remorse to me, and I know that, you know, he wants to have another chance, and I believe that he's worthy of that, and I believe that, you know, I know it's a risk in time that, you know, that's what you guys have to weigh, and I understand that, but I really believe that my brother has changed, and I believe that, you know, he deserves a second chance, and I believe that, you know, that I believe that it's a good thing for him to get. I don't think that he would be a threat to society. I don't think that he would, I don't believe that at all. I believe that he would be a benefit to the community. I know that he would be a benefit to our family. Our parents are elderly. My father has got Alzheimer's disease, and, you know, he's getting pretty bad at that. And my mother also, and she's here on the phone, but she's also getting up there in age and she's having issues with her health and her kidneys, and, you know, they need help from us kids, and, you know, he would be a benefit to them. He would be a benefit and a comfort in their, you know, if he was able to get out in their final years. It would be a true blessing for them to be able to know that their son was out, or at least have the opportunity to get out, you know, because that's been a devastating thing on them. You know, that I know that we, you know, more importantly, we have to weigh what the chances are of my brother reoffending or what he's going to do. And I really don't think that he would ever do anything like that again. I know that he's given him, you know, I know you guys haven't talked about religion or anything like that, but I've spoken to my brother a lot about religion, and I know that he believes in God. He believes in, you know, being accountable for the things that we do wrong in life, and but he also knows that there is grace and there is forgiveness if you truly repent him, and I really believe that he is, and I think that he is very much deserving of it, and our family loves him, and he's a valued member of our family, and I just hope and I pray that you guys can see it, to give him this opportunity at least to move on to the next instance in his, you know, in this process, so, you know, there's something that he can look forward to, so he doesn't give up hope, so there's nothing left for him, you know, and so I just hope that you guys can grant him the parole on this, and I really ask for you to do that.
Okay, Ms. Lee, thank you very much for your testimony.
Thank you.
Ms. Holliday?
Yes?
Would you like to tell the board anything, if you'd start by just stating your name?
My name is Gina Holliday, and I'm 76 years old. I'm going to be 77 in September. And Aaron is my third child. He's my third son. And I love him very much. And he's a very smart, intelligent young man. I taught him about God at an early age, and he didn't forget it. And when he got in prison, he found God again, or God found him. I'm not sure how you want to put that. And he's turned into a very reliable person. He's changed completely, and he is a wonderful person to know. And I wish that you could know him better than what you have just heard all these bad things that he's done in his life. He made some bad choices, but he's changed. He is definitely a different person. And now that my daughter has been able to help him, we've been able to see him and we visit him every 6 months that we can. And we enjoy him so much. We just love to have him in our life again. I miss him so much. People say, well, you got four other kids. Well, that's true. However, you can never take the place of a child. And I've missed him in my life, and I would love to have him back in my life.
Ms. Holliday, thank you very much. Ms. Evans?
Hi.
Hi. Is there anything you'd like to tell the board, Ms. Evans?
Well, I want to tell my dad I love you.
Okay. If you could just state your name, please. I'm sorry. I should have said that.
Angel Evans.
Thank you. Okay.
Sorry, I never talked on here before, so I'm trying to like hold it together.
Well, that's all right. Not many people have, so you're doing fine.
I talk to my dad every day. He writes me 5-page letters and has tried to show me God and show me all kinds of beautiful things in my life. And I rely on him heavily for everything. I talk to him constantly. He knows everything about me. I know everything about him. And he's never been anything but a good influence on my life. And he's helped me through things that I never would have made it through myself. And if you guys could just look at the person instead of all of the crap that you see on that piece of paper in front of you, you would never hesitate to let him be called on the next sentence. And nobody's asking you to let him go now. We're just asking you to give him the chance to get out when he's 80 years old, when he's served his sentences. And like Michelle and Grandma said, so that he can have hope to know that he will be able to enjoy some part of his life, not behind bars. And to be able to hug me whenever he wants, and help me build my house, and be around my daughter, who he loves. She's met him, and when we went to the village, she doesn't like guys very much, but she played dominoes with him, and he used to her until she fell asleep on his shoulder. Drew him like a little baby, and she took a nap on him, but she doesn't even deal with me, and she's so innocent, and I didn't know that she could see him for who he was, and he's beautiful. He really is. I know that if he was out, he'd be a great father and a great grandfather. And I just really wish you guys could know who he is and see him through my eyes, and so you would not have so much hesitation. He's not dangerous. I know it doesn't seem that way based off of the papers, but drugs make you do crazy things, and he's not an old man, you know, but he's older now, and he's had a lot of time to reflect, and I think it's what's right. He's done with this sentence, and it's ready for him to be on to the next one, and I really hope you guys at least consider it in your heart of hearts. Okay. And Dad, I love you a lot, and I miss you.
Okay, Ms. Edmonds, thank you very much for participating today. So the three of you, I'm sorry, Ms. Holliday, was there someone else that might wanted to say anything?
My oldest son, Archie, is here. Maybe he'd like to say something on behalf of his brother. He'll hold the line to give him, and I'll pass the phone to him.
He's welcome to.
Hang on.
Yeah, this is, my name is Archie Holliday. I'm Aaron's older brother.
Yes, sir.
And, I can tell you positively that he's a different person now than what he used to be. And we miss him. We would like to have him back in society where he could definitely be part of it and contribute to it. And I want y'all to know that.
All right, sir. Thank you very much. Okay, back to you, Mr. Holliday. The board will, we're going to discussion in a moment and make a decision, but before we do that, I want to make sure you have an opportunity. Is there anything else you've thought of that you haven't already told us that you want to let the board know before we do that? Understood. Certainly understand. All right, sir. All right. Well, the board will go into discussion, sir, and all we ask is just that you just remain on the phone and remain silent, and we'll be back with you in just a moment.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you, sir. The board is now in discussion. Mr. Holliday was involved in a very tragic incident in 1991, and before I go any further, I just want to say we have no representatives from the victim's family here today, but I just want to remind everyone that there was a victim in this crime, and someone died, and that individual's family is having to deal with that person's death, with the death of their father and possibly grandfather. So, you know, I make these statements, but I do want to recognize and respect that there is someone lost his life in this crime.
Yeah.
I'm hearing from Mr. Holliday that I believe at the time he may have been 28 calendar years old, but he seemed like he was a very immature individual at that time. He described himself as being selfish, not caring about others, and not being very responsible. And I think that his actions show that, that he was. He was not considering the consequences of his actions. And I do believe him when he says it was a tragic, that it was an accident. I don't believe he meant to shoot the man, but that's what happened. And he was there trading the gun for meth, which is also not a good thing. On the other side of things, though, I've heard him say many times in this hearing today that he wants to help others. He's taught. He's worked in prison. He is several times out of his mouth for no particular reason. He's talked about wanting to help others. And I truly think that his viewpoint has changed from the selfish man that he was at the time in 1991. I think his viewpoint has changed considerably. His family talks about how he's helped others too. So it's not just him. Other people have seen that in him, that he's changed. At this time, I would feel compelled to, based on everything we've heard, to recommend to grant parole to the next consecutive sentence, but I'd certainly be interested in hearing the thoughts of my fellow board members. Mr. Neal?
I don't have the inroads official report, but according to the information, the entry wound was in the victim's back, and there were no powder burns indicating that there was a distance between the gun and the victim, which in my mind eliminates the accident issue. But everything else about this is, done well. Seems to have a good attitude, and he's got quite a bit of support, so I would probably be willing to agree to a 12 consecutive sentences.
Any other comments from board members? Mr. Quinones?
Thank you, Ms. Rignall. Some of a similar mindset. I don't want to forget that this was a very tragic crime, and I think the charge of felony murder is appropriate, but I'm also impressed with where Mr. Holliday has arrived in his rehabilitation process, and as one voting board member, he may have arrived at an eligibility for parole to his next consecutive sentence. Thank you.
Dr. White, any comments?
The only thing I would say is I concur with my colleagues. I think that he's made a great deal of progress, and he deserved this opportunity, and so let's see what would happen once he goes to his next sentence. So I would be in favor of his in parole his next consecutive sentence.
Based on that, then I'm going to make a motion, and that is to grant parole 412B and to deny 411 parole, which is absolute discharge. And that's my motion.
Second.
Agreed.
Okay. So, seconded by Mr. O'Neill. And agreed by Dr. Wright and Mr. Quinones. Okay, back to Mr. Holliday. The board's discussion, the board is voting to grant parole to your consecutive sentence, so you'll go to your 18-year burglary sentence, sir. We appreciate what you've said today and hope you continue on the same, same path. And we certainly wish you the best, sir. Do you have any questions for us?
Thank you. Thank you so much. I love you all. Thank you so much. I love you, John. Thanks, guys.
Excuse me. I'm sorry, sir. People on the phone, if you could wait just a moment, please, because this hearing is recorded and only one person can speak at a time. Okay, Mr. Holliday, I'm sorry. As you were saying?
I would just like to say I appreciate your both confidence in me and acknowledgement of the things you have accomplished so far. I'm going to accomplish more. I'm going to, I think, double down and try to do whatever I can from this place and make it out of here. Maybe before I'm too old to be anything but a burden to my family. I want to say thank you very much. I know you have no way of knowing whether the decisions you make are correct or not. But I'm going to try to show you that it is correct. And the next time I see you on this 18-year sentence, which will be years from now, probably. I'm not sure if any of you will still be here, but you will see at that time that the decision you made today was correct. And I'd like to say thank you very, very much to my family for being on the phone and for taking the time every day, as well as the time that you guys are taking out of your day.
All right, Mr. Holliday, thank you very much, and we trust that you will do well and continue to help others as you started. Thank you so much, sir. People on the phone, we thank you for participating in the hearing today. Mr. Holliday's hearing is concluded, and we will disconnect the phone now. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Mr. Holliday, don't hang up. See you soon, please, sir.